cross your fingers.
Blog Talk Radio.
Goat. Welcome to Eerie House. Well, I guess it's oldie timey radio, isn't it? Even though it's Saturday night. We'll explain all that later if you're not already familiar. It's Christmas time, and I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here with
Santa Dave from Akron, Ohio, from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. Ho, ho, ho! And of course, Goat! Yes!
The goat is here. Good old Bob is here. He reports that we are functional and audible. That's wonderful.
Yes. But I am recording a backup once again in case something just, not that something would ever go wrong with Blog Talk Radio.
No, no. Everything runs smooth as chipped glass around here, I'll tell you. Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, that's what you get with us guys. Fogsbane joining in. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It looks like maybe we're working tonight. I don't know. If things work out, we're looking at maybe doing something Christmas evening to make it up to you guys for sticking with us so loyally. I'll tell you, I you're bringing a tear to my eye at Christmas time. But tonight's shows won't bring a tear to your eye. They're kind of exciting.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, I mean, one of them will bring a tear to your eye, that's for sure. With Crisis, we have a bit of a different show tonight. It's odd from the original type of different story Jim French gives us. It's maybe not a tearjerker, but it's a very heartwarming story.
All right. That's got to be the Round the Horn, then.
No. Round the Horn is a UK story. The Crisis is the Spirit of Christmas, I believe it's called. Yes.
Oh, all right.
Should be there. Let me see. Let me go down and see.
Yeah.
The thing is, I added that Round the Horn for guards. A British UK series, I think from like the 60s and maybe into the 70s. But Gar is always talking about Round the Horn. And he tried to tune in to be there with us last night. Of course, none of us could tune in.
No, we couldn't even call the station and said, the phone's disconnected. What? We tried everything to no avail.
Yeah. Never a good sign when it says the number you are calling has been disconnected. Never a good sign.
We thought we would drive by and see boarded windows or something. I don't know. Thanks, Blog Talk. I will say this. One of the reasons that I keep this venue is it's the only one that I know of where you have live reaction in the chat. People can call you live. We could have our guests call us. To share with you and to share the radio programs with them. So I've always liked doing things live. It feels more genuine. I don't know.
Well, it's more immediate, that's for sure. They do have all the clips that we keep in on hand, not just the shows, but the noise clips and the wheel clips and the song clips and all that we're able to keep on hand. And again, the availability of calling in or what they have added in the thing where we can call somebody's computer if they have the ability to talk through their computer and bring it that way as well. I don't know of any other service that does it like this. I'd like to say quite this well, but that's kind of hard to say at this particular moment.
Well, here's a better way to say it. You know what? If it worked, it'd be really cool.
There you go. There you go. When it works,
and
it has been
cool at times, though. There's in reality, Dave, in 7 years, how many nights have we really lost due to technical stuff? Maybe enough to count on one hand or two hands,
yeah.
Maybe?
No. On one hand, there are some times we kind of clicked this off a little early, but not. This weekend has been kind of tough. We did have one other Saturday night we had to reschedule and redo.
But that's very few in that long a time. You know, in Blog Talk's defense, not that I feel like defending them right now, but.
Yes. No, I do know of what you speak, yes.
Yeah. No phone, huh? I don't know, Fogs. I really like that phone because it's the best way to get guests. We, between Dave and myself, and mostly Dave, we've had some fantastic guests on this show.
Yeah.
And we hope to have more. I've got a few.
And we could do the other way, and we could record it other ways where we could get guests, but then the show wouldn't be live.
Mm-hmm. Halfway professional with an edited show clipped down, cleaned up real nice. But again, I think it's a little more genuine the way we're doing it. And we hope to continue doing this. This Blog Talk can just keep things going here.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we got
I will
to
look
do.
At that Fogsbane. I will look at that Discord or that cord or Discord. I will look at it, though. I am looking at all options.
Oh, okay. That would be a video program then, huh? Discord?
Yeah, it's a little disturbing. So,
during the shows.
I'd have to bathe.
and I'd have to shave. Especially on a full moon, that makes it tough.
Yeah. And who wants to watch an old guy chain smoking over here? Worse than Dean Martin, Jesus. But,
it's like video conferencing. Okay. Well, we'll have to look into that. We will have to look into that. Yeah.
Yeah, and we could always do the Chatango thing to hook on to something else.
Yep.
If we do find another venue that suits what we want to do.
A web page, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
All right, where are we gonna start tonight? We have a charming story and one with a charming title to me.
Which that?
The High Adventure has a very charming title.
The High Adventure, yes. Coming to us from South Africa. And get there, yeah. Don't have a date for that one, but yeah.
It's got a cute little title called A Firing Squad for Christmas.
It's interesting. It's a World War II story.
Mm-hmm.
Actually leads up to A Firing Squad for Christmas. So, that might not be a bad place to start.
Yeah, a little holiday cheer. You know, nothing like a nice firing squad. And Rumble Talk, we want our icons back. You hear us? We want our icons back.
Well, who knows? We might be able to insert them in, but I'm not worrying about that tonight. Maybe next week. But tonight, let's just get through tonight.
I'll insert nothing. All right. High Adventure from South Africa. A Firing Squad from Christmas. Originally broadcast.
That's the date.
Okay. Can we narrow it down to like a couple of years? Or
I would say, about 1973. How's that?
That'll be fine. As long as the note is true.
Adventure.
Hello,
Tonight, Ron Evans gives us a special Christmas adventure in his story, A Firing Squad for Christmas.
Come in, Miss Webster. Tucker said you had an urgent matter you wished to talk over with me.
Yes, Mr. Aldridge. It's the beginning of December now, and I've got a lovely idea for a Christmas series of articles.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Sit down and tell me all about it. That's what I like to see, initiative from our junior reporters.
I'd like to go to France, sir. We'll visit the men in the trenches and let the people at home know how they're spending Christmas.
Really, Miss Webster, the idea is preposterous. A woman can't go up the front line. The War Office would never permit it. In fact, not even a male correspondent would be permitted. Elverson is over there now, and the closest he can get is a village called Othill. No. Take my advice, Miss Webster. Stick to the more genteel type of reporting. Wedding, society, and the like. The front line is strictly for men, my dear.
You don't quite understand, sir. I've made up my mind.
Then unmake it.
Well, if you won't send me as an official correspondent, then I shall go as a freelance. I'm sure the Globe, the Herald, and the Mail won't reject my reports.
I see. So, you're giving me an ultimatum,
If that's how you wish to take it? Yes, sir. I'm going to see what it's like at the front line. And nothing, and nobody's going to stop me.
Miss Cathy Webster was a pretty young thing of 22. She'd been with my paper for 3 years, and never, not once, had she ever shown the dogged determination she displayed at that interview in my office. I was shocked by her plan and equally shocked by her sheer stubbornness. There was something more to it than met the eye. Of that, I was fairly certain.
There are nearly 250,000 men there fighting in the rain and mud, Mr. Aldred. That's 250,000 families who want to know how their menfolk are spending the festive season. Well, think of what it could do for our circulation.
Oh, are you really concerned for the paper's circulation?
Well, it's what pays my salary, sir.
Not for much longer, if you persist with this harebrained scheme.
I am going. If you refuse to help me, then you must accept my immediate resignation.
Oh, what is behind all this, Miss Webster? You can't be wanting to do this to boost circulation or to satisfy a morbid curiosity, and most certainly not to elevate your status in the journalistic profession. No. Tell me the truth. What is the driving factor?
I want to do it because it hasn't been done before.
Do I detect a blush, Miss Webster? Yes, most difficult to disguise. I would suggest that there is a gentleman involved.
Are you barking up the wrong tree?
Let me see. Yes, could it be Paul Harrison? He was paying you a lot of attention before he volunteered for the army. He's a captain at the front now, so I'm told. Probably you know better than I, my dear. Well?
I'd like to see Paul, certainly. He writes to me on occasion.
And you're determined to see him for Christmas, eh?
Well, if he's around while I'm there, why not? I shan't make a special point of looking for him.
I know a simple newspaper editor can have a devil of a job separating a woman from her chosen man, but about a war, that's a different matter. No. You'll be wasting your time and money and gather a lot of hardship and heartache in the process.
I'll find a way, Mr. Aldred. Even if I have to cut my hair and wear a uniform.
I see. Then there's no stopping you. Very well, I should hate to lose a valued employee like yourself. So, you can go on your own initiative and at your own expense. My paper will in no way be responsible for you, and your salary will cease until the day you report back here for duty. You will be a freelance in every way but one.
What is that?
I shall use the material you send back and bank your fees, which will be paid at top freelance rates.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Aldridge.
Yes, there is one more condition, though.
Yes.
You must send no reports to other newspapers. Well, is that a deal?
Better than I ever hoped for. If it wasn't for your secretary's nasty mind, I'd give you a big kiss.
Oh, really, Miss Webster, you're getting out of line already. It was December 1914, and the First World War was in its very early stages. The fighting between the French and British on one hand and the German invaders on the other had been bogged down to a dreary series of attack and counterattack from one line of muddy trenches to the next. At that time, it was still possible for a British civilian to cross the English Channel and travel to Paris without a pocket full of military visas. But travel east of Paris was taboo to any foreigner except in extraordinary circumstances. As a result, on the 18th of December, Cathy found herself stuck in Paris. From there, she sent me a report on the petty officiousness of the French and the high-handed officiousness of the British. I published it and drew a storm of controversy, and circulation was boosted by 10,000 copies. After exhausting all the official channels to get a visa, Cathy took to less conventional means to meet her end. She visited a number of underground drinking parlors in the French capital.
You know, miss, I can't believe you're English. You been here long?
A week.
I've been here a couple of months.
On business?
Yeah, sort of.
I know you bought me this drink, and I know you're going to think it's very rude of me when I call you a liar, Mr. Wickens.
Hey, what's that?
I've been watching you very closely. The girls in the bar eye you with, well, a mixture of respect and fear. You run them, don't you?
Oh, yes. Well, that's very perceptive of you, miss. You like to join our happy little group? Be quite a novelty having an English girl.
You can drop that idea this instant, Mr. Wickens. I'm here on genuine business.
Well, what other kind of business could a pretty girl like yourself be doing in a place like this?
You're an army deserter, aren't you?
How do you know? I mean, what gives you that idea?
Female intuition. Desertion is a capital offence, you know. Firing squad and all that.
Yeah, what are you getting at?
I want your cooperation. And I can make it financially worth your while. I need a loosely fitting army uniform. Royal Artillery, 10th Brigade. Can you get it for me? For £5.
Ten?
Ten only, if you get it for me by 9 tomorrow morning.
Well, it's going to be a rare old job. But I've got me contacts. All right, 9 o'clock sharp.
And another £10, if you can get me a fully stamped military visa that will take me to the front. I want it to appear that I'm returning to my battery from a weekend leave in Paris.
Blimey, it's for you.
It makes no difference to you, does it? Well, is it possible?
Oh, pass is easier than the uniform. What name do you want, honey?
John Francis. Hang on. I'll use my own surname, Webster. Gunner John Francis Webster. I'm staying at a pension, Rue de Mail, Hôtel Etranger.
Got it. 9 prompt. How about an advance?
Cash on delivery, Mr. Wickham. Just like your girl.
The army deserter Wickens was as good as his word. The uniform fitted her well and succeeded in disguising the more prominent features of her feminine figure. Cathy paid her hotel bill, and with the uniform and a paper parcel under her arm, she went to a second-hand shop and bought a bicycle. She rode westward out of Paris, then turned south. On a lonely country road, she changed into the uniform and buried her own clothes. Whistling in a most unladylike manner, she cycled eastwards toward the village of Othiel. She was sure that there she would be able to find the location of Paul Harrison's battery. It was now the night of the 19th of December, and there were still 6 days left to Christmas. As it happened, when she arrived in the village of Othiel, affairs were in a state of chaos. Nobody spared her a second glance, and her questions, asked with a deep, husky voice, went unanswered. British and French troops were marching through to the front, buttons and weapons shining. On the other side of the village came a tattered array of British and French troops returning from the front, muddy, wounded, and totally disillusioned about the glories of war and blind patriotism. Cathy successfully passed 2 French and 1 British checkpoint and continued her journey eastward. Already she could hear the sound of the big guns and see flashes of light on the darkening horizon ahead. Suddenly, a shell exploded in the road about 100 meters ahead of her, and the blast threw her from the bicycle. It was now dark. To her right, she could see the charred ruins of a farmhouse. Hiding her bicycle in the ditch, she hurried across to it to take shelter for the night.
Now, who's that over there? Answer me, I'll blow your ruddy head off. Look, I'm going to see you.
Gunner John Webster.
Where from?
10th Brigade, Royal Artillery.
Oh, fancy that. Same here. You get lost as well?
Yes. Yes, we were ambushed.
Sure, well, come in. It isn't healthy close to the door like that. You know, shrapnel. We're in range of the jerry big guns from here. I'm Eddie Thatcher. Who's mop are you with?
Captain Harrison.
Oh, yeah, I was with old Blood and Guts Bates. He got blood and guts, all right. He got himself blown into the top of a ruddy tree, he did. Only his boots left on the ground. His feet still in them. All right, what are your plans, Johnny? Going to stay lying low, or are you going to go back and get yourself blown up?
I don't know.
Well, I say we stay here for a while. There's chickens and eggs in the barn outside, and I found a big dollop of that French cheese. Stinks to high heaven with them. Nice taste, bad. Have some.
No, thanks.
You sound a bit posh, didn't you? Where are you from?
London.
Same here. Where did I put that bleeding candle? I doused it when I heard you crossing the cobblestones. Yeah, I got it here. Yeah, that's better. Now I can get a good butcher's at you. Phew, we're only a youngster, eh? Your voice still squeaky. Ain't broken proper yet. You're more like a drummer boy than a ruddy gunner. Now, Johnny, where are you going?
To find a quiet corner to sleep. I'm awfully tired.
Don't worry about it. It's all fixed up. Found a couple of tarpaulins and a load of straw in the barn. Make a nice, comfortable bed. We can share it.
It's all right. I'll fix the place for myself.
That's all right. I can see what you're thinking. Well, let me tell you something, Sonny.
No! I tripped over that stone.
Oh, you did you? Isn't that funny?
What do you mean?
You can't fool me. Take that tin helmet off.
I will not.
Take it off before I make you take your pants off as well.
Well, you wouldn't dare.
I'm a big fella, as you can see. Well, do you do it or shall I? That was right. There's no ruddy soldier in the whole British Army with a fancy haircut like that. Now tell me something, darling. What's a pretty girl like you doing up here at the front?
Gunner Thatcher was a big man, and his seemingly rough manners gave her cause for concern. Cathy decided it best to tell the truth and did so. He sat on a bench and listened without comment. When she finished, Cathy waited pensively for his reaction. She was now totally at his mercy. He chuckled.
You're quite a girl, eh? So, is this Captain Harrison you've come all the way to see?
A mixture of business and pleasure. I'll continue to write in my report.
Oh, pleasure, she says. There's no pleasure here at the front, my pretty young miss. Like you get a German shell blowing your head off. Yeah, Captain Harrison, eh? Yeah, I heard of him, yeah. I think he's down Maru way.
Is it far?
About 50 miles south of here. Well, if I was you, I'd hang on a day or two. There's a story going round that his battery's moving out this way.
Can't very well stay here, can I?
Well, it's as good a place as you'll find in these parts. Can't go much further forward or you'll be in the trenches.
Well, I've got the uniform. I can continue pretending I'm a man.
In the running trenches? They'll find you in 2 hours flat, I'll tell you. Look, can you imagine what they'll do to you finding a pretty young thing up there, eh? A great batch of men who've been shelled and machine-gunned for weeks and weeks and weeks. Oh, me, I shudder to think. Now, look, you stay where you're safe from everything except a direct hit from a jelly shell.
Yeah. she's in a little bit of a racy situation there. Dave, are you back? I don't know if Dave is back or not, but Snowman James joins us in the chat. As we wrap up part one of High Adventure, we got a lot of bonus material, so I am going to go right on into part two of High Adventure, A Firing Squad for Christmas.
The burly gunner made her a comfortable bed, and they spent several hours talking before she fell asleep. That night, she gleaned enough information to write at least 3 more reports. The problem was going to be sending them back to Paris and avoid the usual military censorship. Although she was not going to give away any secrets, she was critical of many things the military would not approve of. She awoke next morning, and he gave her some tea in a tin mug.
Hello, hello, hello. What's going on here?
Oh, blimey, it's the sergeant.
We're having a running picnic, are we? So this is where you've been hiding, eh, Thatcher? I was ready to book you down as dead, missing, or deserted.
And who's your friend? Where are you from, sonny? Hang about. You're a funny-looking soldier with hair like that.
Stand up. Come on, you heard me.
I'm sick.
None of your nonsense now. Who's this you've been kipping with, Thatcher?
Well, I'll be darned. A woman like this. Where'd you pick her up?
Look, I'm sorry, Captain. Look, I think you'd better tell him the truth.
No, but it's all right. She's English, Sarge.
Such a mouth, Thatcher. Get yourself down the road to the battery as fast as your big feet will carry you. I'll deal with this.
Yeah, but, Sarge, you don't understand.
Go, or I'll have you charged with desertion.
Please, Eddie, I'll be all right. Think of yourself.
All right. I'll let your captain know just as soon as I can, miss. I swear it.
Thank you, Eddie.
Well, miss, you could be English, and then again, you might not be.
What do you mean by that?
The Jerrys have been using women spies, and a lot of them talk English like you. All posh-like. No, sit down. I'm taking you for a walk to brigade headquarters, lady. Not that men are getting killed through women like you.
Don't be ridiculous, Sergeant. I'm not a spy. I'm as English as you are. My name is Catherine Webster, and I'm a freelance journalist. I'm on my way to the front to observe and make reports.
You got written permission?
Well, no. Well, not exactly.
You must have come through a dozen or more checkpoints. Where's your pass?
Here.
See. But according to this, you're John Webster.
I disguised myself as a soldier, as you can see.
False document and disguised as a British soldier. In my way of thinking, lady, that makes you a Jerry spy.
Why, that's absurd. Absolutely ridiculous.
Well, then prove that you're who you say you are.
Well, I can't at this moment. I have to leave my proper identification papers back in Paris.
How bloody convenient. I'll bet most of the German spies say the same thing. Now, just you start walking for the door with your hands on the back of your head. I'll be right behind you, and make no mistake. One move to run away, and I'll shoot you dead. Not that it'll make much difference. It's the firing squad for you anyway.
Kathy was ignominiously taken to brigade headquarters, which was a partly damaged village community hall. There she was locked in a bare room while Sergeant Bailey made his report. Soon after, a stern-looking man entered and conducted her to an office which contained a desk with a chair on either side. The interrogation was harsh, and many of the leading questions were asked by Captain Dalton a dozen times over.
You're continually telling lies, young lady. This interrogation can lead to only one conclusion if you persist. Summary execution as a German spy. Do you realize that?
Please, you must believe me. Contact my paper in London. The editor, Mr. Aldred, will identify me.
We're fighting a war. A vicious, bloody war. Every day, hundreds of men are dying at the front. One more life means nothing. Now, this editor chap won't be able to see you, will he? For all we know, there could have been a genuine Catherine Webster. Perhaps she was killed, and you've taken on her identity. It wouldn't be the first time something like that's happened. Now, we daren't take the risk of letting you go. It's easier for us to execute you and file a report.
Monstrous.
It's war, my dear.
What about Captain Paul Harrison? Oh, contact him. He'll vouch for me.
I'm sorry, but we're not prepared to involve one of our fellow officers in a nasty business like this.
It's not a nasty business. Well, you can't just sit there and talk my life away. Well, send to Paris and get my real identification papers, for the love of heaven.
In the event of them being found, it would prove nothing. They can easily be forged, just as your military pass was. I'm sorry, but you'll have to do better if you want to cheat the firing squad.
What can I do? I've told you all I know.
As far as I'm concerned, you've told me only what you've been trained to say. Look, there's one way for you to get out of this mess. Tell me the truth. Sign a statement. Tell us who trained you, what part of Germany you come from, and all the military information you can. It could save your life.
I can only repeat what I've already told you. As for military information...
Good at that, aren't you?
Well, what do you mean by that?
We've found your notebook. It was brimming over with your observations. That in itself condemns you as a German spy.
Well, my notes! Well, I told you, I'm a newspaper reporter. Where are you going?
Obviously, there's nothing more to be said. I shall report to the colonel, and he will decide on the time for your execution. Detail!
Sir?
Escort the woman back to her room. Shackle her. We can't risk having her escape.
Seems fairly conclusive, Captain Dalton.
There's no doubt whatsoever in my mind, sir. She is a spy.
What about this Captain Paul Harrison?
I've checked, sir. No such officer exists in the Thames.
I see. Pity, such a pretty girl, too. This notebook condemns out of hand. Very well, Captain. I'll sign a warrant for her immediate execution while you organize a firing squad. Oh, cover her head, though. You know how squeamish the men get about shooting a woman.
I had a right old time getting to see you, sir, but why should I tell you a lie?
Damn it, man, I'm not calling you a liar. It's just so astonishing.
Kathy, here at the front. I've talked to her for hours, sir. I'm making no mistake. She told me everything.
She was taken to brigade headquarters, you say?
That's right.
Oh, Colonel Radcliffe will be giving her a sharp telling off, mark my words. I've a good mind to let her sit there and sweat it out until tomorrow. She got a nerve coming all this way to write reports for old Aldred, eh? I bet he craftily put her up to it, the old devil.
Look, if you ask me, sir, she really came to see you, sir, for Christmas.
Silly girl. What kind of Christmas party does she expect to have here? A few snorts and a turkey leg in the officer's mess. She wouldn't be allowed in there for a start. Oh, well, I'd better hand over to Captain Rigby for a while, and I'll pop over to headquarters. Thought I was in the 10th, did she? Just like a woman to get a man's battalion number. All wrong.
Kathy, shocked out of her wits, sat on a wooden bench, feet and hands shackled together by lengths of chain. An army chaplain visited her, but was deaf to her pleas of innocence. Her last visitor was the stern-faced Captain Dalton.
Very well, young lady. The time for heroics is over. But you can still save yourself with a confession. If you don't, the execution detail will be coming for you in less than a minute from now. Well, have you anything to say? You're thinking you could spy on us? Yes, of course it was. But there are still many pretty fräuleins like you who can speak perfect English. The Secret Service will use every last one of them. A pity, but it's a dirty war. All wars are. Here they come now, a few seconds ahead of time. Now, please, try not to make a fuss. I'll do my best to make it easy and quick for you. If you stand quite still and make a good target, there's no chance of the men missing you. Oh, Colonel.
A visitor for your so-called spy, Dalton.
Kathy! What a funny way to spend Christmas.
Poor Fudge.
It was both embarrassing, yet a relief to the elderly Colonel Radcliffe. To have shot Kathy would have raised a terrible hullabaloo in a very short time, and he would have been fully responsible. Captain Paul Harrison's positive identification assured her release into his custody. Of course, she would have to be sent back to Paris as soon as possible, so the wily old colonel, to salve his own conscience, gave Captain Harrison a week's leave in Paris as Kathy's official military escort. It ended well. And Kathy's newspaper reports later caused more storms of controversy, much to my delight. In those few days, she succeeded in establishing a solid professional reputation for herself and spending that happy Christmas with the man she loved.
High Adventure is produced by Henry Diffenthal.
how music was any more exciting, eh?
True. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. I am just now pulling up Gar's models of the stories that he sent us last night. Oh, there it is. Oh, well, that's the wrong one. Let me see what this one is.
Oh, you better figure it out. Eerie House Radio, putting the pressure on Dave. Proudly presents Garless Moral of the Story. Bye, Gar.
No, it ain't. I couldn't find it. Anyway, we'll go with this. You know, a lot of great things you can get for Christmas. A bullet in the head ain't one of them. How's that?
Wow.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go.
I don't think I ever asked Santa for that.
No, me neither. I will take... I will take what life has to offer first.
I thought he sent some to us. I don't see them anywhere.
I don't know. But we done had us a firing squad for Christmas.
We did.
Maybe
we should have something a little happier to go with it as a little stocking stuffer we can unwrap.
Why not? Okay, let's dig into a stocking stuffer here. We'll reach into this one here.
Okay.
B, tell me, what are you so deep in thought about?
Me? Oh, nothing.
Ah, come on now. Tell Uncle Perry.
Well, you'd laugh.
No, I won't. I promise.
Well, you know that Christmas poem, the one that begins, "'Twas the night before Christmas and all through the house"?
Not a creature was stirring. Not even a mouse. Yeah, sure, I know. What about it?
Well, suppose the mouse was stirring.
Come again.
I mean, suppose the mouse was real and could talk.
I'm stirring and I can talk.
What did you say, Mitch?
I didn't say anything, Perry.
Funny, I thought I heard a voice. B, you mean you wonder what the mouse might have to say about Christmas, that is, if he could talk?
Uh-huh. Why doesn't somebody ask me?
Hey, there's that voice again.
Hey, kids, we haven't got all night, you know. It's me on the floor next to you.
Where? Hey, B, look out! A mouse! Look, a mouse!
Well, that's a woman for you. What'd she expect, Clark Gable?
Well, after all...
After all what? You were wondering what a mouse might have to say about Christmas, right?
That's right, mouse.
So you got your wish. And before we go any further, let's get something straight. This is one supper club visitor who doesn't want to hear the Pussycat song.
Now, look, I just recorded the thing, you rat.
I'm a mouse.
Oh, excuse me. Would you have a Chesterfield?
Oh, thanks. Don't mind if I do. Now, what's on your mind, Junior?
Well, we were wondering. I mean, you know the poem, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas and All"?
Oh, yeah, I know it, all right. When I hear that poem, it's the beginning of my troubles for another year.
Really?
Yeah, comes midnight, Christmas Eve, Santa Claus comes down the chimney, and boom, I'm a DM.
A DM?
Yeah, displaced mouse. Yeah, it was only a loose brick in the fireplace right next to the wood box, but to me, it was home.
You sound as if you don't like Christmas, Master Mouse.
Oh, no, now wait a minute, Mr. Como. You got me all wrong. I think it should be Christmas every day.
I know, but you just said you...
Oh, I know what I said. Look, I'll explain. See, the other day, I was in a department store, sort of looking over the toy department, when I see a little girl and her mother. Well, you didn't have to look twice to know they were very, very poor. The kid picked up a doll, and the way she held it, you knew that she wanted that doll real bad. And then she put it back in the counter. Didn't say a word. Now, Mr. Como, I know that her mother would have given her right arm for the money to buy it for the kid. Well, just as they were leaving, a sales lady picks up the doll and puts it back in the little girl's arm, see? Compliments to the store, she says.
Well, that was very nice.
Oh, yeah. But there's an even nicer part to the story. A big red-headed guy was standing near that counter. And I notice that the sales lady glances at him just before she gives the kid that doll.
Hmm.
He paid for it. Come to find out, the guy does this every year. Just stands around the toy counter waiting for the little kids that don't have anything, and then he spends his Christmas bonus buying toys for them. So, like I said, Mr. Como, I think it should be Christmas every day.
I see what you mean.
Oh, I know. There's lots of people like that redheaded guy. You read about him in the newspapers once in a while. People that know that playing Santa Claus to a child is the biggest thing in life. But it's just too bad that we can't have that kind of spirit all the time.
Well, why can't we?
I don't know. You tell me.
No, seriously, what's so tough about it? Peace on earth, goodwill towards man. That's not hard to remember, is it?
Well, what are you lecturing me for? I started this thing, didn't I?
Well, I didn't mean it that way, but people sometimes don't stop to think how simple it is. Just taking the time to think a little bit about the other guy and showing a little respect for his feelings, his beliefs, and his way of life.
Yeah, yeah. That's a nice way of putting it. Well, I gotta be going. Got a lot of things to do, you know. Oh, say, did you mail your Christmas cards, Mr. Como?
Oh, sure, days ago.
That's good. Give the postman a break, huh? That's a holiday spirit.
By the way, did you put Christmas seals on yours?
Oh, Natch. On the packages, too. Well, I'll be seeing you. Oh, before I go, would you do something for me?
Yes, name it.
Well, how about giving me a head start so I can hide, you know, and then singing the Pussycat song?
I thought you didn't like the tune.
Well, I didn't, but now that I've heard your record, I do.
You're lying and you know it. But now I've heard everything. A mouse requesting the Pussycat song. Okay, get ready. I'll count five. Are you ready?
I'm going.
One, two, three, four, five.
This is the story about Perry who came home late one night.
Must have been about 2 or 3 a.m., something like that.
Gotta get me some sleep. He yawned as he turned out the light.
Sleepy, isn't it? I guess I was a little too tired to do any dreaming, though. I remember.
Whether he dreamed what happened, or if he really heard it, he wouldn't bet. But he swears it sounded like two cats singing a duet.
Come out, my pretty kitten. This is me, your boyfriend Tom.
Meow, meow.
Oh, come out, my pretty kitten. This is old Tom. Tom, the atom bomb.
Meow, meow. We assure you we'd come out if only we knew how. They tell us that you really are the cat's meow.
Oh, come out. Come out. Come out, my pretty kitten. Now?
Meow, meow. Come out. Come out. Come out, our crooning kitten. We will serenade the moon.
Meow, meow.
Come out, our little kitten. We will sing a little tune.
Meow, meow. When the folks got home at night, at 12 or thereabouts, they locked the door and they forgot to put me out. Alone from night to night, you'll find me.
Come out,
our crooning kitten. Meow.
Okay, now. There we go. We got a little Perry Como there. Merry Christmas, Gar and CW.
Yep. Hey, I did find Gar.
Happy.
Oh, there's CW. Hey.
Hey, happy holidays, season's greetings, Feliz Navidad, everybody.
Happy Festivus.
Boy, boy.
Happy Festivus. Oh, God,
oh,
yeah.
Your whole crown. It brings a tear to my eye.
Mine too.
I'm allergic to cats. Because I'm allergic to cats. That's why.
I thought it was the onion I just cut. Oh, well.
I'm appearing briefly because the moral was there's a right time and a wrong time for subterfuge. There you
yes.
go.
I did just pull that up during the cat song. Yeah, yeah. The pussy cat song. Okay, my turn to wash your hands. Okay.
There you go.
Okay, yes, thank please. You. Thank you. So that was Mr. Perry Como, a.k.a. Mr. Relaxation. If anyone remembers that Second City skit from back when.
Yeah. He's back, and he's more laid back than ever, and he was laying on a bed singing. It was Rick Moranis. It was absolutely, absolutely hilarious, yeah.
I loved Second
City. Oh, my
gosh. That was comedy gold.
Yes.
Somebody introduced me to that when I took a voyage into the Great White North, a.k.a. Canada, and I literally fell on the floor, hysterical, dying for oxygen.
I remember when they spoofed... when they spoofed the Clint Eastwood spaghetti westerns, it was called A Fistful of Ugly. Yeah. I think Harold Ramis played the Clint Eastwood character. It was funny. Those guys are great.
Outstanding.
Yeah, and Harold Ramis was only
anyway.
With us for a year or two. That's all Harold Ramis was with it. But boy, he contributed while he was there, that's for sure.
Oh, yes, most definitely. And I don't know what came first, Second City or Saturday Night Live, or did they come almost at the same time?
I think it was because Saturday Night Live that the Second City started its show, yeah.
Yeah. Saturday Night Live was what, 73, 74?
Yeah, they started stealing all the Second City people. And so Second City said, well, if we want to keep on them, we got to have our own show.
Yep. A lot of Fire Sign Theater people there, too.
Yep, and National Lampoon people from the National Lampoon Radio Hour.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's not forget they've gone on to the next generation of, I don't know if anyone ever watches... Schitt's Creek, and no,
yeah.
I didn't say that word. That's how it's pronounced. That's
I know, I understand.
Pronounced.
Yeah,
I get it.
S-H-I-T-Z.
S-C-H.
S-C-H-I-T, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's,
They spell it right. They know their shit.
They do.
If it's spelled that way, is there a rabbi in there?
Something like that.
How do you guys call it? He really hasn't done anything since Cabin Boy.
oh my gosh.
Cabin Boy. With that, we probably ought to see if we can squeeze in another radio program on our Christmas time special. Let's see. We did High Adventure. How about something a little more heartwarming now that we're all here together? And don't forget, by the way, Garden Rule right after this show.
Right.
I'm a horrible horror.
Yes, blah, blah.
Yep. So we got an episode of Crisis next.
We do, which is not your usual crisis.
Right.
Yes. Not your usual crisis.
Yeah.
And,
you don't have a crisis when all the relatives start banging down the door and wanting food, and you totally forgot to shop.
That'll
but,
do it.
Yeah, we do have this. I do have a date for this one.
Ooh, this one's entitled "The Spirit of Christmas,"
and it's from December 25th of 1970 and 5.
The Golden West Radio Network presents Crisis. In the 90 or so broadcasts in the Crisis series, we've offered you each week a program of mystery fiction. But this is Christmas, a time for special things. And so tonight we depart just this once from our usual bill of fare. Tonight, we offer you neither a mystery nor fiction. Instead, we'd like to tell you a true story with a happy ending. A Christmas story that really happened and changed some lives in the process of happening. Except for a few of the names, everything in our story is true. When I told the story to a friend of mine the other day, he asked me what the title was, and I said I really hadn't thought of a title. Well, he said, of course, there's only one thing you could call it. The Spirit of Christmas. And so that's what I've decided to call it. I'll be right back. Well, to begin, our story takes place in the town of San Bernardino, California, at a time when the world was briefly at peace. For Don Janis, it was the best time he had ever known. He was 20 years old, just out of the army, in love, and engaged to be married to the girl of his dreams, Jill Carver. He had a promising job in the very field he wanted to be in. Don was a radio announcer. Jill was attending college up in the Los Angeles area. And the only drawback was that they couldn't be together all the time. But Christmas was coming, and Don was counting on that occasion to present Jill with the ring. He'd saved considerable cash for the purpose, which wasn't too easy since his salary at the radio station came to $67 a week before taxes, and he was making payments on a new car to boot. But, well, he knew they'd make it somehow, even if he didn't get the raise he was hoping to get when they were married. One of Don's duties in his job was to do a children's radio show every afternoon at 4:30. It was sometime just after the 1st of December that Arnold Beeman, the program director, had a talk with Don.
Oh, Uncle Don, Christmas is a-coming.
Right.
Are you got any plans to thrill the kiddies with?
Well, I don't know. I've been trying to think of something to do. Of course, we have Christmas story albums to play.
No, well, I assume you'd do that. What we need is a gimmick.
Yeah.
You know, a mail pull gimmick would pleasure the sponsor considerably.
Okay, like what?
Well, last year, a station in L.A. did a letters to Santa thing.
Well, how'd that work?
Just fine.
No, I mean, how did it work? You know, what did they do?
Well, it's pretty simple. You make a pitch on the air for the kids to send you their letters to Santa. And you promise to read them on the air and send them on to the North Pole.
Uh-huh. So?
Well, the mommies and the daddies learn what their kids are asking for. You get it?
Well, yeah, but is that all there is to it?
Sure. Now, can you talk like Santa Claus?
Ho, ho, ho.
ho, ho, ho.
ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, well, cut a disc at 78 and slow it down to 33 and a third.
Well, do we have to do the Santa Claus thing?
You don't like Santa Claus?
Well, no, I like Santa Claus.
He's a nice old man, if you like nice old men.
No, I mean, maybe I could just read the letters without doing the Santa Claus bit.
Well, sure. I'd find some special music or something, jingle bells, something like that.
Okay. Well, when do you want me to begin this?
Well, we've got to get started in time for buying the presents, so, a couple of weeks before Christmas.
Okay.
Okay, Uncle Don.
Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho, ho.
Well, that's really how it all started. Just a Christmas gimmick, as the program director called it. For Don Janis, it was another new experience in this job, which he had held for less than a year.
Well, kids, you know what? It's only 2 weeks until Christmas. And have you decided yet what you want Santa to bring you? You have? Then I'll tell you what. Write your letter to Santa and mail it to me, Uncle Don, in care of station KITO, San Bernardino. And I'll read your letter on the air and then send it right on to Santa himself up at the North Pole. Now, while you start your letter to Santa, here's one of your favorite stories. It's Frank Tashlin to tell the story of
Well, the next day, the letters began to pour in. A stack of wrinkled, smudgy envelopes addressed in penciled block letters awaited Don when he came into work. And that afternoon, he began reading the first of his letters to Santa on his program.
All right. It's time to start reading our very first letters to Santa. And here's one from Bobby Osborne, who lives at 321 D Street in San Bernardino. Santa, Bobby wants a Roy Rogers hat. And he says he's a big fan of Superman, so he wants a Superman T-shirt. And he hopes to get a puppy. All right, we'll pass that along to Santa, Bobby. Now, this letter comes from a girl, from Mary Timmons, who lives on Cedar Avenue down in Colton. Mary wants a horse. Golly, Mary, that's going to be kind of tough for old Santa to do, putting a horse down your chimney, but we'll pass your letter along to him. Now, this letter comes from Hazel Fernandez of Riverside.
I'll have the breaded veal cutlet.
And coffee?
Milk, please.
You want your coffee now, Mike?
Yeah, good. Okay.
You know, it must make you feel kind of good to have your name on a story in the paper, Mike. You know, Mike Pritchard, written by Mike Pritchard.
Oh, it does, even if it is only the San Bernardino Sun.
Well, you'll move on someday. You know, one of these days you'll be on the Times or the Examiner.
Well, how about you? Are you planning on being Uncle Don for much longer?
I don't know. I sort of inherited the show, you know, from Hugh Sanders when he quit to go to Hollywood, and that's how there happened to be an opening on the staff. I never really wanted to do a kid's show.
Well, do you want to be a disc jockey?
I don't know. What I'd really like, I think, is to be a staff announcer in Hollywood. You know those guys make $100 a week?
Oh, I can believe it. Of course, it'd cost more to live in L.A. than it does out here.
Well, that's true. But, you know, I've got it all figured out, how Jill and I can buy a nice little house and live on what I make here and even save some money.
Oh, sure. That is if you don't eat.
No, no. We can make it.
When are you getting married?
Next June.
Well, you got 6 months of freedom left, pal. You better be living it up while you can.
I'm too busy to live it up.
Hey, what are you doing after you eat?
Now? Oh, just going back home. I mean, back to Mrs. Odell's. I rent a room in this old lady's house.
Well, why don't you ride with me for a while? I'll show you a side of San Bernardino you didn't know existed.
Is that so?
You know, this is an old Santa Fe town. You'd be surprised what you see down along by the tracks.
Nah, I think I'll just eat and go to my room.
Well, if you ever want the lowdown on the seamy side of town, you know who to ask. My specialty.
Okay, I'll remember that.
And he did remember it, too, because it wasn't long after that conversation with the reporter Mike Pritchard that Don found he needed some lowdown on the seamy side of town. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. It was Don's practice to drive to Pasadena on Friday nights, take Jill to a show or dance, and pick her up next morning and drive back down to San Bernardino so they could be together while he worked his half-day shift at the radio station. While Don spun records in the control room, Jill busied herself opening the day's mail for the Uncle Don program.
How many letters did I get altogether, honey?
Well, let's see. This makes 48 today.
Hey, you know, that's not bad.
Of course not. Everybody loves Uncle Don.
Including?
Dear Uncle Don, guess what I want for Christmas?
Ho, ho, ho. And what do you want for Christmas, little girl?
Just you, darling.
Hey, hold it. And that was Frankie Lane singing The Cry of the Wild Goose. KITO time is now 2:47 p.m., brought to you by H. Floyd Brown Nash in San Bernardino. See the all-new 1950 Nash Air Flights and the revolutionary compact Nash Ramblers now at H. Floyd Brown on E Street in San Bernardino. And next, it's the voice of Vera Lynn and her hit record, Again. Huh?
This letter.
Well, what does it say? Well, what is it, honey?
Well, I can't believe it.
What?
Listen. Dear Santa, I'm 7.5 years old, and I help my mother with the dishes, make my bed, and watch my 3 brothers and little sister. My mother says she don't think you'll be able to find us this year, so I want to be sure and tell you where we are. We just moved to 219 21st Street. There's my mommy, my brother Greg, 6, Tommy, 4, Johnny, 2, Marianne, 1, and me, Susan, 7.5. And pretty soon we'll have another one.
Let me see that. Pretty soon we'll have another one. We don't want very much, just some little cars and socks and a doll for Marianne. And some food if you can spare it. Please try and find us this year. Mommy is so sure you won't be able to. My friend Donna is writing this because I can't write good. Love, Susan.
I wonder what their last name is.
Well, I don't know. She doesn't say.
Are you going to read this letter on the Uncle Don show?
I don't know. I don't know what to do with it. That was on a Saturday. Don separated the letter from the rest and kept it with him through the weekend. He and Jill read it over and over. Through the words carefully written on the lined notebook paper, these two fortunate young people began to get a glimpse of life from another angle. It was to be the beginning of a new education for both of them. For what happened next, stay with me. I'll be back.
Well, I got my Christmas gift early. We're all here in the studio.
Yes, and the studio is working.
Yeah, wow. Thank you, Santa.
Chalk, chalk.
After last
thanks,
night.
Blog,
yeah.
Thanks, Blog Talk.
Yeah.
For once, Blog Talk. Thank you.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, just in time.
See, now
was...
if you had a P.O. box or a UPS box, I would have sent you something I sent the other guys.
Yeah, a nifty ornament. Hand created, you know, his own art, a little Christmas Santa thingy, and it even came in a cool tin box that looks like a little mailbox.
It did.
It's really cool.
It was a cartoon, yes. It's hanging on my tree right now. It is hanging on my tree right now.
Yep. I still have the ornament from a prior year.
Well, send me an image of it when I go online, and I'll print it out, and I'll have an ad hoc version of it.
Okay.
There you go.
Put it up in the
comment chat there. She can get it there, I guess.
Yeah,
okay.
Or put it up in the on Meta or Facebook or whatever they're calling it this week.
Something
turned into they didn't want to call it a name, so they call it X now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Tweeter.
It's like Prince. It's like symbol. But you always said formerly known as Prince. So whatever somebody says,
I know.
X,
yeah.
Formerly known as exactly. Twitter.
Right.
Pain in the butt.
Exactly.
I'll send it to you in the Facebook Messenger a little bit later.
Yeah. It's not like we say formerly known as creepy cat. Well, never mind. But
No. Too much water under the drawbridge, I would think. Too much.
Yep.
Yep.
It is what it is. But good times tonight. Christmas time, Fogsbane's here, Snowman James, and good old Bob in the chat, and of course the whole gang right here in the studio as we finish up this little heartwarming charmer from Crisis called The Spirit o' Christmas.
When Monday came, Don was down at the radio station waiting for Arnold Beeman, the program director, to get there. And when Don thrust the letter under his nose. Beeman read it silently and then handed it back.
Well,
he read it
what
with
do you
his
think
nose.
Of that? That's really something, isn't it? You know, we've got to help that family.
Yeah. It doesn't mention whether there's any father in the picture. It probably isn't.
Well, I'm going to read this on the air this afternoon and ask for donations.
I wouldn't do that just yet.
Well, what do you mean? Why not?
Well, have you gone out and checked this story out?
Checked it out?
Well, sure. You can't just start asking for donations until you can verify the whole thing's genuine. Think, boy, think.
Genuine? Why would she make all this up?
Oh, kids have been known to do that.
get mad at their mother and claim she beats them, or get mad at the old man and call him a drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, you must have lived a very sheltered childhood, my boy.
Well, then what do you think I ought to do?
Well, you've got a couple of hours before you go on shift. Why don't you start by checking on the address in the letter? I mean, drive over to this, 219 21st Street. See who lives there.
21st Street was an older residential street with frame homes that once were known as California bungalows, most with broad front porches for afternoon shade and shingled sides, gabled roofs, and stubby palm trees in their yards. The house numbered 219 was easy to find. It huddled behind a newer garage that had been built out to the sidewalk. Don's heart was heavy as he approached the sagging steps to the porch. It was obvious the house was empty.
Doorbell probably doesn't work. The place is empty.
But he didn't want to give up now. So he went around to the neighbors.
Hello?
Ma'am, I'm looking for the family that lives next door at number 219.
Why, that house has been empty since August.
It has?
Yes.
Well, was it a family with five children and a mother?
Why, no. Just a middle-aged couple. All they had was a cat. Yes, moved out in August.
I see. Well, thank you very much. Sorry to have bothered you.
That afternoon dragged by for Don. He read the birthdays, played the story records, chatted with the children, and read the Santa Claus letters. All but the one he carried in his coat pocket. About that, he didn't know what to do. Until that evening, at the restaurant in the Antlers Hotel, he ran into Mike Pritchard again.
Hey, you look like the last days of summer, Donald. What's wrong?
Well, you know this letters to Santa thing I've got going on my show?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it.
Look what came in the mail Saturday.
The whole repeat. What? Well, how many kids is that?
Five. And another on the way.
Five, yeah. Yeah, wait a minute.
What?
I don't know. Something vaguely familiar about this setup.
What do you mean?
Well, I seem to remember something about some gal with a bunch of kids. What I remember isn't so good. No, it couldn't be the same one.
Well, what?
Well, have you read this over the radio?
No, and it's a good thing, too, because I think it's a hoax.
Well, why do you say that?
Well, I went out to the address in the letter. It's an empty house. It's been empty since August.
Let's see the address.
That's right there. 219 21st Street. It's just two blocks the other side of E Street.
So you think it's a hoax?
Well, what else could it be?
Well, the kid's only 7 and a half who wrote it. Maybe she got her numbers mixed up. Listen. Let me keep this letter for a day or so, okay?
Well, I guess so, yeah, okay. What are you going to do with it?
Well, you want to know the story behind it, don't you? Well, I've got a few contacts. I'll call you.
It was only a day later that Mike brought the letter back to Don at the radio station.
What'd you find out?
Well, first of all, it's no hoax. The family does exist, and what's more, they're living at 219 21st Street.
In an empty house?
No, in the garage.
The garage?
Yeah, you notice there's a garage built out in front of the empty house, kind of between that house and a vacant lot.
Yeah?
Well, there's your family.
Well, why in the world are they living in the garage? I mean, why not in a house?
Because you live in a house, you got to pay rent.
You mean...
Yeah.
You're just...
Yeah, they're squatters, right. And the kid was telling the truth. They've got almost nothing.
Well, what about the father, the husband?
There isn't any. Never was. See, the mother is one of those characters I was talking about, the ones down by the railroad tracks.
You mean a prostitute?
What's the matter? Don't they have such things up in Pasadena?
Oh, those poor kids.
Now, of course, KITO wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Well, I guess I can't read the letter on the air.
Oh, of course not. That'd almost be like aiding and abetting.
Can I have it back?
Huh? Oh, yeah, the letter, sure. Here.
Thanks.
And thanks for finding out.
For as many of his 19 Christmases as Don could remember, the thrill of the day had been in what he received.
and there had been a lot under those 19 Christmas trees, even through the long years of the Great Depression. But now, in his 20th year, a change was coming over him. With Jill's help, he went from one sponsor to another, showing the letter, telling the story, and asking for help. In every store, the answer was the same. Yes. Yes, we'll help you do something for those kids.
Don, the manager of the market at the corner said he'd match dollar for dollar in food, everything we buy for them.
Yeah, and the guy who runs a surplus store down by the station is giving us the same deal. We're going to have clothes and underwear.
And what about Mr. Beeman?
Arnold? What about him?
Well, can't you ask him to see some of the sponsors, too?
To tell you the truth, honey, I haven't even told Arnold what I'm doing with this letter. I'm not so sure he'd like my going out and putting the bite on our sponsors.
Oh, Don, here he comes now.
Huh? Oh, hi, Arnold.
Hi, kids.
What's that load of stuff you've got there?
Well, I was just down to one of our esteemed sponsors, Emporia, the department store having the sale.
Yeah?
Look what fell off the truck.
Oh, Mr. Beeman, children's clothes, toys, blankets, books.
Well, I just happened to be passing by, and I thought I'd stop.
What did all this cost you, Arnold?
Nothing.
Come on.
Well, listen, you should have heard your old dad playing Hearts and Flowers. They wanted to give me more, but this is all I could squeeze into that Ford convertible.
What are we going to do with all these presents?
Well, you can stash them in my office if you want to. When are you going to deliver them?
Well, Christmas Eve. When else?
Well, not until they're all wrapped.
Oh, that's what I forgot.
I didn't. Now, just give me a workspace where I can do all this.
Well, use the newsroom.
Arnold, are you kidding?
Well, just don't let Leo Cross get away with any of the presents.
Well, when Don and Jill figured it all out later, they discovered they'd spent just about all their own Christmas money on presents for the needy family. But by then, it didn't matter. Nothing mattered, except that the five children have the most lavish and wonderful Christmas of their lives. So on Christmas Eve, Don and Jill loaded Don's sedan with the packages and had to make two trips to get everything piled up around the side door to the garage where the family lived. And then Don pounded on the door and dashed for his car parked across the street with the lights off. And they sped off, cackling with glee, imagining the looks on six surprised faces when they saw the mountain of gifts. And there our story would end, except for something that happened during the first week of the new year. It was a letter addressed to Uncle Don with a familiar return address, 219 21st Street, but in an unfamiliar hand. After he read the letter, Don put in a long-distance call to Jill in Pasadena.
Darling, how are you?
I don't know. I never felt this way before. Let me read you a letter that just came in.
Okay.
It says, "Dear Uncle Don, Susan finally told me she had written a letter to Santa and sent it to you, so I know you must be the person responsible for the miracle that came to our door on Christmas Eve. The presents were perfect and so many. All the clothes fit perfectly and the children loved the toys, but the greatest gift was..."
Yes, Don?
"The greatest gift was that you made me realize that there is some good in the world. You have given me back my faith in people and my faith in God."
Well, that's our story. Don and Jill did get married the following summer and have shared many Christmases since then with their own children. But none shine any brighter in their memories than that time when they were 20 and learned the true spirit of Christmas. I'll be back in a minute with the names of our players and a few scenes from next week's program. The Spirit of Christmas featured Mark Wayne as Don, Lee Posh as Jill, Paul Herlinger as Arnold Beeman, and John Amendola as Mike Pritchard. Direction by Pat French.
Yeah, just a little bit of Christmas. mentality there.
Well,
I'm just mental.
I'm on my fourth box of tissue.
My work here is done.
Tissues.
My work here is done. As soon as we get the show back, I tear it down to hell.
Since Gar is still here, you should let him do his moral.
Well,
really quick.
Oh, we probably shall. I got to be quicker than that. Here we go. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Proving that Santa Claus answers your letter takes less effort than proving Santa Claus himself. Or free rent is free rent. There you go.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting. Horrible.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
We got time for another stocking stuffer there, Dave. We got time for another stocking stuffer.
Mm. Hey, are you accusing me of putting stockings somewhere?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not.
All right.
Oh, I'm shocked and appalled, even more so than usual.
My work here is... Again, I say my work here is done.
I'm appalled and shocked.
And now, brought to you as a sustaining feature of the Bob and Ray Show, One Fellas Family. Today's episode, entitled Wrapping the Presents, is taken from book XXII, chapter VII, pages 112, and the bottom of page 113.
Wow.
It's late afternoon as we look in on the family now, mother and father working about the dining room table.
Well, Freddy, got most of them done anyway.
My goodness, Christmas wrapping and paper are much more colorful than they used to be.
Oh, we've come a long way in the art of wrapping packages, Daddy.
Yes.
Still problems with these unusual shaped items, though.
Think that's just one little facet the way we progress. I can remember when most of it would be just tied in twine and a little sticker with Saint Nick on it. Don't open until Xmas. And that's about all. But now we have this paper with gold and silver.
And a beautiful sight, certainly. And one will make the Christmas morning seem even more pleasant and beautiful.
Well, I'm going to get you a gift certificate for the dentist. Your teeth are slipping again.
Freddy, have you figured out how you're going to wrap Clifford's present?
Well, I'd love to disguise them somehow.
How are you going to disguise a pogo stick?
Well, I thought if I could put it in a box twice as long as a pogo stick, I have no idea what it would be.
Well, I look around, except we've used up most of
it. You going to try?
Yes, I'm
sorry. I don't think you should.
No, you're never too old for something like this, Fanny. Good exercise.
You're going to go straight up. Be careful.
You can't direct it. Can't direct it. Oh.
Well,
right into the box of ornaments.
Now, are you hurt?
Here. No, I don't believe so. Here. But isn't Clifford a little too old for something like this?
Well, if he's too old, what were you doing on it? Land's sake.
Well, I suppose you're right.
Now, who's the one down cellar that...
Jack.
Because we get the odor of malt every once in a while from under the cellar door.
What could we give him?
I have no idea. I thought maybe you could think of something.
Well, something to go with his hobby, I suppose, would be...
Well, how about some sort of a sort of a tax stamp thing that he could put on his product.
No, I bet he's never thought of that either.
I think they have counterfeit tax stamps. Machine, that is, where he could make his own stamp.
I'll go downtown and see if I can find a store that sells that.
Yeah.
You've been listening to One Fellow's Family, brought to you as a sustaining feature on the Bob and Ray Show. Today's episode, entitled Wrapping the Presents, was taken from book XXII, chapter VII, pages 112, and the bottom of page 113. One Fellow's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messi. This is a Messi production.
Certainly is. And go ahead and shuffle. Go ahead to shuffle off to prepare for Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul in right about 38 minutes and 46 seconds from now.
Whenever you do that, Dale, I always feel like I need to slap you on the back or something, you know?
Or just slap me. People just want to slap me. You're not the only one that wants to give me a good slap.
Line up, everyone. Take a number and get in line, please.
Yeah. It would
orderly
be like
line.
That. Yeah, the orderly line. You start there around the block, and we'll work our way to the front.
Yeah. Yes. Stay within the velvet rope, please. Stay within the velvet rope, please.
Yes.
Well, I was hoping Gar could stick around for just a couple more minutes so he could kind of give us some of his memories of Round the Horn. Apparently, his dad was a big, big fan of Round the Horn. And so he would come in and sit down with his dad and listen to many, many, many of these stories. So actually, they're more of a show than a story. It's a comedy show out of the UK, certainly after the Goon Show. So it's definitely got some UK humor in there and kind of a fun way to go. So that's what I was really kind of hoping he would share some of those memories with us. But we'll have that, I guess, perhaps another time.
Perhaps. But we can share the episode. It's the Christmas special about Cinderella.
It is.
Yeah.
And he has no... let me see. I don't think I have a date for this one either. Of course not. Let's see. It's crisis. Here's it. I measure.
1492.
Yeah, it could be. It could be 1492.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here you are. It's 1492 when Cinderella
wore her dress of
wore
blue.
The shoe that was blue.
Yeah. Blue.
Yeah. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, she had a blue dress, I think. I don't know. Back when Disney
after,
was good.
But that was after Elvis had his blue suede shoes.
That's right. Here's part one.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, round the hall. And here now, our special guest, who has flown all the way from Montenegro to be with us tonight, Siffleuse extraordinaire, Gladys Mavrogadatta.
Hello, and welcome to the show. Thank you very much. Yes. Thank you. Well, now, I expect you'd like to hear some of the events that are taking place this Christmas. There's the floodlit Natterjack toad trembling at the Freethinkers Hall. There's the 100 yards hop, step, and gesture race at Potter's Bar. And the Free Wales Army will be staging a raid on the London Aquarium. But personally, I'm looking forward to an exhibition given by our old friends, the over-80s nudist leapfrog team, who will be giving us a demonstration of prune fumbling. And I hope to pick up a few wrinkles there. All right, Smith, swing into the announcement.
Right, sir, ring-a-ding-ding. First, via radio link, we go to Mount Everest to hear how that daring mountaineer, Sir Fledermaus Bullusage, and his loyal Sherpa Jam Singh are spending their Christmas. Are you there?
Yes, well, here at a narrow ledge on the north face, it's bitterly cold, and I have to keep talking to stop my Sherpa from dropping off. We've poured flaming brandy over the pemmican and twined holly round our pitons. And now now about to pull a Christmas cracker. Are you ready, Jamsing? Wake up, man, wake up. Wake up.
Yes, I am waking. I got the chapped chapati.
All right. Right, now hear this. Take this cracker.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Pull! Oh, good. I've got another little plastic novelty.
And I've got the paper. Ha!
And thank you, Sir Fledermaus, alone on Mount Everest. And another man working through the festive season is St. Pancras washroom attendant, Mr. Montague Gore Strangely. I see you festooned the place with paper chains.
Yes. I made them myself.
Did you really?
Yeah, nice, isn't
they? Aren't they charming,
nice.
Yes.
Yeah, not only that, I've written the words Merry Christmas in white paint on the roller towel.
Shows up very clearly.
Yes.
And I left Mr. Gore Strangely secreting threepenny pieces in the bars of soap and looking at the cheery greetings on his wall. You know, there's a special magic about this time of the year. The snow drifts into the gutters, the band drifts into the pub. Above all, it's the season of pantomime.
And so tonight, ring-a-ding-dong. Half alive from London, Armpit Theatre proudly and furtively presents Cinderella, or Through a Glass Slipper Darkly.
The scene opens on the village green. The villagers dance about gaily, the footlights lighting up their feet, and the spotlights lighting up their spots. My name is Baron Hardup. I have three daughters. As Cornplaster.
Hello, dear.
Played by Hugh Paddock. Then there's my second daughter, Bred Poultice, brought to life. Life! By saturnine sex symbol Kenneth Williams.
Hello, Daddy. Look, hither comes Dandini. Look, hither comes Dandini, the prince's messenger.
That's all I ever get, these plot lines.
Oh, yes. I bring you salutations and a message from your sovereign prince. Insofar as that this evening a splendid ball, cum cheese and wine party is to be held at the palace, all maidens are requested to attend for the purpose of a royal butcher's at the local crumpets.
Meanwhile, back at the kitchen range is my third daughter, Cinderella, played by swarthy, guttural ex-bomber pilot Betty Marsden. She sits among the cinders, a rosy glow on her cheeks. Enter Buttons, woodenly recited by Douglas Smith.
Hello, cinders, it is I.
Buttons.
Oh, I do beg your pardon.
See, I said he couldn't handle the part. Let's give it a love scene to an announcer. Especially when there's professionals standing by. Yes, thank you. Yes. Here's me, fobbed off with an ugly sister. Ugly sister, spitting a cough. I'm not being serviced on this day. I need the service in, Ducky. I mean, I can cope with more than this, and it doesn't stretch me. I'm used to enormous parts.
Yes. All right, you can play Buttons as well.
Oh, good. But yes. I say, sir, Mummy was listening specially.
Oh, shut up, please. Shut up.
Yeah,
go on.
Get out.
Now then, re-enter Buttons.
Hello, Cinders, it is I, Cinders. Cinders.
That's the way it ought to be played, you see. But a feeling. He makes it sound like 10 o'clock news, isn't it? Notice the timbre in my voice. You see, I can reach right the back of the hall with me timbre, if I really try. And without your artificial aid, Duffy, I can tell you things make your ear curl.
That'd be a miracle, too, wouldn't it?
Oh, what a shame you cannot go to the ball tonight, Cinders.
I know, Buttons, and yet my two ugliest sisters are going.
Be not gloomy. I will cheer you with a song and a smile.
We're going to hang out the washing on the deep green line. Have you any good washing? Here, hang on. Hang out the washing. Just how old is this script?
Well, what? What's the matter now?
I thought the pages were a bit yellow. Look at these jokes. Here, page 10. I hear Matto's just invented a new tank. God, it's been near. Four gears, one forward and three reverse. Now, shut up. It's all very well for you. You haven't got to read it. Look, ration books, gas masks, fire watching. I can't read these.
Very well. Let's leave the kitchen.
I should think so. Matto, indeed. Right.
The transformation scene. Right. The lights dim, the music swells, the stage revolves, revealing to our astonished gaze, we're back in the kitchen again.
Cusack.
Everyone has gone to the ball. Cinderella sits alone amongst the cold gray ashes, weeping softly and playing her saxophone. And hardly had she finished when a wrinkled old crone appeared in a twinkling.
Hello, old crone. Let me help you off with your twinkling.
How kind are you, child? I am your fairy odd mother.
There's a typing error. Oh, they missed out the G.
Oh, yes, yes. G, I am your fairy. You shall go to the ball center. But I'll wave my magic wand.
Played by thin, rigid Douglas Smith.
And amazing things will happen. They always do when I wave it about.
There was a blaze of magic light, and in a trice, Cinderella's rags disappeared in their place. Well, come on, Paddock. Shouldn't there be something in their place?
Yes, sorry, I'm still a learner with this wand.
I'm not very good at changing gear.
It is I, but here, go and put something on.
It's not my fault. Me wand's jammed in second. There, that's better. Abracadabra. Ah, a shimmering silken ball gown studded with rhinestones. How lovely you look.
Oh, silken ball gown. Yes, it's me. Oh, thank you, fairy. Thank you, fairy odd mother. Now I can
listen,
go to the...
Listen, I should be wearing that.
This wouldn't fit you. Look at you. Great ripping deltoids. Fists like smoked ham. You wouldn't get anyone kicking Sandy Betty Miles in space. Now, me, you see, I'm more your lithe. I'm more your lithe, boyish type. Yes, I shall play Cinder.
Look, I'm not standing for this. No. I'm currently starring in Bride of the Swamp Monster. I've got billing over the title.
All right, Betty, all right. But you know what he's like. You see, I'll see it's made up to you. Don't worry.
I don't know why you're battering her up. She's in the twilight of her career, she is. I've seen her in Bride of the Swamp Monster. And she don't wear makeup.
You're only jealous. You're jealous because you did not get the part.
Yeah, she don't wear makeup. You're more a paper-hanging job, you are. Oh, sorry, I spoke.
Aren't we all?
Yes, no. Enough, everybody. Now, let's see, where were we? Oh, yes, the fairy godmother called for a pumpkin and waved her thin, rigid Douglas Smith over it.
Swish, swish.
Well done, Smith. And And amazingly, the pumpkin turned into a coach. And after that, she took four white mice, also played by versatile Douglas Smith.
Squeak, 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 sir.
Good man. On to the ball.
Hey, what about the glass slipper and being back at midnight and all that?
Well, there's no point in making it stiff with plot, eh? Okay. As Cinderella entered the ballroom, the prince saw her and started. The crowd around pretended not to notice. Before long, Cinderella and the prince were dancing together. The music swelled, tales from the Vienna woods floated upon the midnight air.
Anyway, dearie, you got me behind this tree in the Vienna woods. Well, I said, if you think I'm that sort of girl...
Laughter! Laughter and gaiety were everywhere. And joy knew no bounds. They had to throw her out in the air. Suddenly, the clock struck.
Bong, sir.
You get around, don't you, yes. Smith? Cinderella ran out into the night, leaving behind her nothing but a glass slipper, a surgical stocking, a copy of Judo Monthly, a roll of wallpaper, and a plastic sink tidy. And the following day, the prince promulgated a decree in a public place.
Oh, yes! Oh, yes! The prince hereby decrees that whomsoever this glass slipper, surgical stocking, copy of Judo Monthly, roll of wallpaper and plastic sink tidy fits, he will espouse.
The prince and Dandini visited every maiden in the kingdom, trying it on. Finally, they came to my own abode, hard up who? Well, first corn plaster tried it on, then bread poultice. And suddenly, from the kitchen ran a tousled waif.
Let me try it on.
Nonsense. It would never fit you, Button.
I'm Cinderella now, you fool. Oh. Here, give me the blimmin' thing.
There, see, it fits. Oh, prince, prince, when shall we be wed?
Say something, Prince. Speak to me. Come on, say something. Who's supposed to be playing Prince Charming?
Well, you are, actually.
I...
Oh. Oh, yes. Oh, actually, this could be rather nasty.
I'm talking about with the script, too. And so, kiddies, the prince in the person of Kenneth Williams and Cinderella, also in the person of Mr. Williams, were married and lived happily, if confusingly, ever after.
But wait, there's more. There's more.
There is more. One was very happy to learn that Cinderella could play a very mean sax.
Yes, she could.
Ooh. All right.
Hey, why don't you, CW, why don't you step over to the fireplace, reach into one of the stockings hung with care, and pull out another stocking stuffer.
I'd be delighted. There we are. Oh, I'll just toss another log on the pyre here. Just a moment. There we are. And there. Here we are. Ooh, looks like a nice
Bobby
one.
Bobby boy. Don't talk to me, you base canard.
You're really burning, aren't you? Look, here's the pistol. It's all wrapped up nice and pretty. And delivered to Mr. Cranston.
Me?
Mm-hmm. Bought the gun. I put both our names on the card. With yours first, of course.
Well, Bing, you're a doll.
I hope the postman won't think I'm cutting in.
Gee, Bing, I had you figured all wrong.
You should know better, Robert. We're pals. No matter what happens.
No matter what happens?
That's right. Someday, your figure will start to spread.
Your fall and arches will drop like lead.
You'll find your beautiful smile is fled.
No hair atop of your shiny head.
Don't let the wrinkles upset you. I'll still be happy I met you.
Darn it, brother, we're pals.
someday you're gonna lose your physique. You'll have the doctor in twice a week. This chic will suddenly go antique. You'll be so deaf that I'll have to shriek. Your fans will no longer court you, but you've got your sons to support you.
Darn it, brother, we're pals. Darn it, brother, we're pals.
Union give us the biggest
isn't this
record.
A great thing?
To
you know what I mean?
The
and they think rest. They think Phil Harris drinks. Isn't this awful?
Will you get Mal Hallett on the phone, please?
Two.
Come to my show
when you. When you
I guess he's just mad because his name's not on the banner, I guess. I don't know.
He was on the telephone when we rehearsed.
Sure, that's a nice place to rehearse on the telephone. You're supposed to rehearse music. What the hell are you doing on the phone? I know, but this is a new arrangement. We don't do Maxwell's arrangement. I mean, it's not a bad idea, but we don't last. You know that.
Let's do it again.
Sure. Listen, you know what happens there? Darn it. Brother, we're... Now, listen to the boy. Listen to Sir Thomas Grierson over there.
Darn it, brother, we're pals. A Merry Christmas!
Wait. I don't think I want to do it at all. Oh, my back. Say, my idea. I had nothing to do with this. The writers are upstairs.
I don't
like to talk to them. I don't know where you were last night, but I'm glad you won first prize. Look, I want to talk. Listen, let's do it that way then.
Right.
We'll do it your way, Les. The hell with the show. Let's do it your way. Okay. Hey, listen, wait a minute. Fellas, for no extra money, could you sing a little louder? I guess not. All right, thanks. Go ahead. Where do you want to start from? We'll never get to the Palladium, and I have my card filled. We're,
no matter what happens, that's right.
You don't mind if I read a line, do you? It's my show. Do you mind if I read one line?
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay, here we go, all right. All right, Les, don't beat him. Just let's play. Okay, Les, then. Okay, oh, what the hell he got in there?
What are you smoking? Rehearsal clothes.
Rose Bowl.
Oh, rehearsal.
That's all.
Ushers, start the motors. We'll be right out. Go ahead. All right. So then. Oh, you want to say that? Okay, Les. Oh, I never did get along. No matter. Oh, where? Yes. No, on you. We're going to have a big meeting. You and I now are. You didn't have any arrangements, no music, nothing. You came in with nothing again.
Look at the shoes, though.
All right, now here we go. All right, stop the tittering. Here we go, then. No matter what happens...
Here we go.
Okay, legit now. Let's go. Okay, come on. All right. No matter what happens.
That's right.
Someday your figure will start to spread.
Your fault. I'm not ready. Let's move, Les. Come on, quit fooling around.
Well, I know.
All right. No matter what happens.
That's right.
Someday your figure will start to spread.
Your fallen arches will drop like lead.
You'll find your beautiful smile has fled.
No hair atop of your shiny head.
Don't let the wrinkles upset you. I'll still be happy I met you. Darn it, brother, we're pals. Someday you're gonna lose your physique. You'll have the doctor in twice a week. This sheet will suddenly go antique. You'll be so deaf that I'll have to shriek. Your fans will no longer court you, but you've got your sons to support you. Darn it, brother, we're pals.
Oh, Merry Christmas!
Darn it, brother, we're pals.
We got just barely enough time to wrap up the Christmas special from Cinderella Around the Horn. Merry Christmas.
Now, every year at this time, I like to hold a party, but unfortunately, the party I had in mind got a modeling job at the last minute. It was at the Merchant Seaman's Hospital, so I decided to invite a few friends round, and to help me with the arrangements, I had Daphne White party.
Now, first, why not a non-alcoholic punch? Tasty, but not inebriating. Here's my recipe. Marinate some cenopods in elderberry wine. Add a pint of prune juice, some rhubarb essence, and fig extract to taste. Top up with lemon juice, decorate with cucumber slices, and serve in individual cups. It's absolutely ideal if you want a running buffet.
Yes, it should make the party go all right. Thank you, Daphne Whiteside. Ah, I heard the bell. It must be the first guest.
Madam Osiris wishes you the compliments of the season and brings you lots of luck and many roses.
Oh, Madam Gnome Clencher, let me take your hat, your coat, and your crystal ball.
Thank you.
And if you want to prognosticate, you know where it is. Right here on the hall stand.
I'm afraid I haven't brought you a present, but I'll give you a quick shufti up your zodiac. Now, let me see. Your Pisces the fish, isn't you?
Yes.
Well, your house is in the fourth quarter, rising over Capricorn with your nodes in the ascendant and Virgo in the broom closet.
Well, what does that mean?
Means watch out for Chinese armed with baseball bats.
Thank you, Madam Osiris.
Oh, don't thank me, dear. It's all in the stars.
Ah, yes, new arrivals. Hello, why? Charles. Alone? Where's Fiona?
She's gone, Mr. Horn. Gone.
You mean lost?
Not lost, gone. She left this note here. Read it.
Q, when is a door not a door? A, when it's ajar. Why should she say that?
That's from her cracker. The note's on the other side.
Oh, I see. Now, what does she say?
Darling, Charles. It's all over, my darling. I'm breaking it off. It could never be, my darling. Our love was a flash in the pan, a mere miasma, a few fresh, fleeting fragments of time. Snow in April, April in Paris, Paris in the spring, and spring in Park Lane. Sob, sob, gulp, gulp, gasp. It's all over Charles. Oh. It's all over Charles.
She writes very small, doesn't she?
help Mr. Horn with her gonit. I shall die a little.
Die a little?
Yes. Just here, the little gray bits over my ears. It'll take years off me.
Yes. And do you think that'll bring her back?
Back? Who wants her back?
Hello, it's Rambling Sid Rumpo.
Oh, hello, me dearie. Oh, very nice to see you. Who will spare a penny for a wandering carol singer? Oh, for there's rhyme on me cord wangle and a sprig of holly at me grusset.
Well, I'll get the pliers. So, good Rumpo, wouldst thou singst for the company?
Fine would I, only I'm under exclusive contract to Edison Bell. Still, seeing as how it's you, I'll burst forth with my air as follows. It is called Good King Boroslav, and it goes after this fashion. Good King Boroslav looked out on the night of granges, saw them whirling round about, armed with rubber plungers. Brightly shone their artifacts, red their possets glowing. He knew not from whence they came, but he knew where they were going. Out he went into the snow, loud his lummox ringing, with his moolies all aglow and his trousers clinging. Back he bought those grungers bold, stood them by the fire dogs. Save them from the bitter cold by thawing out their yule-logs. Those who would a grunger be, take heed of this warning, for there is no guarantee you will live till morning. If you wordle in the snow, in a spot you've chosen, dawn's first light is going to show your wobbling irons are frozen.
And thank you, Rambling Sid. Well,
yes, sir. Very nice of you to have me.
Well, now, while he was singing, two other guests arrived, listened for a moment, and headed straight for the cloakroom. Cause and effect, I suppose. I think they're still in there. I'll just check. Hello, anybody there?
Oh, hello, I'm Julian. This is my friend Sam.
Oh, yes. Oh, hello, Mr. Orr. Nice of all you, Dolly Old Eek. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll be out as soon as Jules finished doing his rye. It takes him hours, combing it so the join don't show.
Oh, you'd never mention
nah,
it.
Nah, you're so vain.
Oh, vain. Who's talking? Puts hormone cream on his knees, Mr. Orr.
No, you do too.
And anti-wrinkle cream on your elbows.
Well, if you've got good points, you might as well look after them. But at least I don't wear a piece.
I'll give you a piece.
Come and meet the rest of the guests.
No, I don't think I could face anybody. No, I'm too upset.
Oh, come on. They're dying to meet you, and you did promise to entertain us.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to move till this from this spot. I'm not going to move till Sand apologizes.
Never!
Go on. After all, it's Christmas.
Oh, it's Christmas. All right.
Now, shape?
Yes, all right. There we are.
There, good.
There's no warmth in it.
Oh, come on.
Quiet, everybody.
Quiet, please. Julian and Sandy have promised to entertain.
Oh! Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Now,
with Jewel at the piano, yes, we will give you a selection of campfire songs. Warming your hands at the old campfire. So if you know the words, don't hesitate. Keep your mouth shut. Jewel?
Yes?
Ready? Order now your luffers on the Striller's boner.
Oh, trust me.
Trouble, I do.
And here we go.
Slide through the air with the greatest of ease. The daring young Omon is flying trapeze.
His eek is so bona,
all balloons he does please.
And my love is stolen away.
Then we stood up and wrote, there's a hole in my bucket, dear Sandy, there's a hole in my bucket, dear Sandy, a hole.
Then why don't you stuff it, dear Julian? Then why don't you stuff it, dear Julian, stuff it?
With what shall I stuff it, dear Sandy, with what shall I stuff it, dear Sandy, with what?
If I were to tell you, dear Julian, if I were to tell you, we'd be off the air.
Well, that's it, and if we've managed to raise a smile this Christmastide and helped you to forget your troubles for half an hour, all I can say is you must be particularly easy to please. Thank you.
That was Round the Horn, starring Kenneth Horne, with Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddick, and Betty Marsden. On the musical side, you heard the Max Harris Group. The script was written by Barry Took, Johnny Mortimer, and Brian Cook, and the program is produced by John Simmons.
Pretty good show, Round the Horn. That was our Christmas special, number one. Yeah, let's try to squeeze in the show that was supposed to be for tonight, because it's a good one, right, Dave?
It is. Hans Conried, the only one who starred in both Sears Mutual Theater and a CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Ah, and he'll be in the end of Scrooge. Now, we're going to do that Monday. That's right, Christmas Day. That's our Christmas gift to you. We're going to work on Christmas Day at 6:30, Dave?
Eastern.
Yep, and that'll be Monday night, the end of Scrooge. In about 2 minutes and 22 seconds, it's Audible Horror starring Gary the Ghoul.
There you go.
I suddenly feel better.
Lighter
on my feet.
I want to give a very heartfelt Merry Christmas, Dale, to you, CW, and Brother Gar.
And that's all.
Oh, no. Thank you so much.
That's all. No one else. Screw him. No.
And, of course, Bob Bailey, good old Bob.
Absolutely. And Snowman James and some other folks that dropped in. Mary Chris came in for a while. Jack Forsyth came in for a while. Thank you for visiting with us. Were you lost? No.
And thank you for everyone else on all the other podcasts that you may be listening. No, you are listening from Happiest of Holidays. Season's greetings and all that other good stuff.
Yep. Season's beatings.
No. Greetings. Greetings, Dale.
Oh.
Greetings, Dale.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. Grumble. And, yes, very merry, merry Christmas to you all. And we'll see you on Christmas evening. Good night. Sleep tight. Don't let monsters bite. Blah, blah, as Dar might say.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Watch that, Vincent. I'm back.
Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Sounds too hard to dig it, man. Sounds too hard.
Oh, wow. It said 7 seconds left, but it went right on time with the Frightenstein. Good. Good, good, good. Dave, I was thinking about you last weekend while watching football. If you recall, we had a conversation. You said there's two guys I'd like to see do well. Joe Flacco.
And Baker Mayfield.
And they those two had the number one and number two total yards for that weekend. So your wish kind of came
yards
true.
That weekend. They did. Yes, they did. Yep.
I think Mayfield out threw Flacco by just a little bit. And a little football knock. Yep. Now it's their game.
Yep. I did see that on Facebook. That really was cool news.
And
I know Baker won. And I know Flacco won. Flacco came from behind.
Yes, he did. And the Steelers just made our path to the playoffs so just a little bit easier by beating the Bengals.
Oh, did they? I didn't think they'd beat the Bengals.
They kicked their butts. They actually kicked their butts. They started the game with like an 86-yard pass. And I'm sure, CW, you're just absorbing all this sports going, wow, who cares?
I'm sorry, what? You said something? What?
Exactly.
I'm sorry. I zoned out. Twilight Zone time. You were saying something about a football thingy or a ball or and a foot?
It was just a beer commercial. Pay us no mind.
Oh, okay. There you are. Yeah. Oh, yes, I'm back. It's like an episode of The X-Files.
Yes.
Yeah, that can be scary.
Our adventures here on Blog Talk have been like The X-Files of late.
Yes. Yeah, we could not even call in last night, CW. We couldn't open up the studio or anything.
Yeah.
I was wondering. I thought it was me. I thought, you know, they really don't want me around anymore, so I've been locked out and they changed networks.
Don't you ever believe that. Don't you ever believe that. You are family. We have made that clear.
Oh, yes. That's a good thing, right?
Yep.
That's a good thing, right?
Well, it could be.
Okay.
Home is where they have to take you in. You are home. Isn't that true?
Well, How come they greet me with these sweaters with very, very, very long sleeves, Dale? I don't understand that.
I don't know. Are you planning on ugly sweaters for gifts?
I don't know why I've never invested in one of those heinous sweaters, but if I do, I'm going to get one that lights up. I want one that illuminates, that has about 5,000 candle watts of when it lights up, it's blinding. It's like National Lampoon House.
Don't burn yourself. That's all I got to say. I guess the modern lights don't get too hot, though, the LED type lights.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
Me, I would stick light bulbs in them and stuff.
Oh, dear.
These crazy helmets, like they take a football helmet and screw light bulbs on the sides and on the top, and he'd actually plug it in and put it on his head with a fright wig.
Oh!
It's amazing.
Oh!
Start himself on fire.
I mean, he didn't burn down the place. Holy cow.
Well, he almost did with Gamera once. Somebody sent him on a Gamera, and he stuck a couple skyrockets in the back feet. And it was supposed to fly across a string across the studio, but the string snapped and it was flying everywhere.
Oh, no.
Hysterical.
Great. Now I've got that song. Gamera.
Oh, don't make me upload it. I'll do it.
You wouldn't dare. You wouldn't.
The crazy.
Don't challenge him. Don't
tell. Crisis story reminded me when I first started doing Dale K Spook Show on Amherst City Cable. I mean, this was even before Creepy Castle days, before Monster Channel, all that stuff. I was doing a show on the Amherst City Cable, and to me and said, do you want to be Santa Claus? So I got to be Santa Claus and take live calls from all the Amherst kids for what they wanted. And I have it on disc somewhere. But
wow.
That was like the most fun thing. They got Clink had a Santa Claus costume, and the director's aunt was like the perfect Mrs. Santa. And we sat there and we took calls from the kids, and that was really cool. I mean, I that's one of the things I'll never ever forget. I got to play Santa Claus and take phone calls from kids. No, you're not getting
that's
it, you little
cool.
creep. You were bad. I know it. I was watching you.
Outstanding. What that episode of Crisis, Dave, did you have a date on that again?
Yeah, that one had a date. That was from February. Oh, no, I'm sorry, December 25th of 1975.
Oh, 75,
oh, okay.
Wow.
Because, yeah, I'm thinking, you know, considering that the mother was one of the profession, I'm thinking, wow, they weren't judgmental, overly judgmental or
yeah,
anything
that would have
that
never
nature.
Flown in the 50s.
The reporter was the most judgmental of them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was
but,
a
you know,
a
you know, you would
story.
Never have gotten, yeah, you would never have gotten any of those merchants to donate so much as the time of day back in the day in the 30s, 40s, or 50s, probably the 60s,
well,
too.
Well, I don't think they went around saying, hey, you got presents for this prostitute. You know, I don't think that's what they said. They showed them the letter. They let them read the letter, come to their own conclusion. Because I don't think he even realized that until the reporter said it, that's what was going on there.
Most definitely. Well, it just goes to show. I mean, it was very progressive considering now we're in the 21st century. Everybody is so judgmental.
Yeah, considering.
Yeah, not judgmental.
That was based on a true event. They just changed. That was based on a true event. They just changed the names for that story.
I don't know.
Yep.
Intriguing. I guess they did say it was based on a true event. All right, just like Dragnet.
Yeah.
Only nicer.
Yes. With a happy ending.
Where's the tissue?
Don't cry.
Ah, yes. Oh, there it is. Oh, there it goes. Tugging at the heartstrings. Oh, my goodness.
That might be the saddest thing John Williams ever wrote.
But yeah,
oh,
it makes us
yeah.
smile. It makes us smile every time you play it, Dale.
It's because we're warped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's true.
I know I am. Well, looks like Gar's starting with Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, it looks like.
Yeah, that's what we plan on playing tonight. So.
Over on the Twitches.
Oh, classic. And with that being said, gentlemen, I really must be away. I was delighted that I was able to come on to this show, and I take it there's going to be another show, was it tomorrow or on Monday, Christmas Day?
Christmas Day.
Christmas
Monday
Eve,
night.
Christmas.
Monday night.
Monday night. I will do my utmost to slip away.
It wouldn't have been the same for the holidays without all of you guys, really.
It was
and
so
Gar,
cool
wherever
that everybody
you are.
Yep, it was so cool that everybody called in, yeah.
Yeah, and it worked.
Yeah.
And it worked, too.
I have it recorded just in case, Dale.
Good. The live audience caught it for sure. I didn't hear any complaints about any. I didn't see people logging in and out, so hopefully Blog Talk got their stuff together, and maybe, just maybe, we'll get our icons back in the little chat there. We'll see.
Even the icons weren't working?
Yeah, they're just green human male form icons.
Yeah, green like shadow things.
Ew.
Which is weird,
yeah.
Because my picture is where I'm logged in, my picture is up there. But in the chat, it's one of those green icon things, yeah.
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 Damn it.
Yeah, Blog Talk better hire some better techs or something, you know?
I think they had a major, major issue again, so.
Yeah. And I don't think it's based on any upgrades, but it just works like it's supposed to. It's great, though. It really is great. Because I don't know of any other format that lets us do it this way.
Yeah. Yep, you are correct.
This is true. Live chat, and people can come and download the shows.
Yep, they can come in live. They can listen later in the archive. Gives us a lot of flexibility. So Blog Talk, get your act together.
There you go. Twitches are starting, and with that, I will do, if I may, my final task of the evening.
Absolutely.
To introduce to you the one, the only, no, not Santa Claus, but he's almost as good, Mr. Jimmy Durante. Take it away.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night.
Say
good night. Good night.
Good
night. What
night,
more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and it could think a do.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Happy holidays to you, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
And holidays, everybody.
Arrivederci. Hasta la vista. Adios.
Adios, muchachos, caballeros de la
You get out of here.